Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that has for 15 years been helping people with cancer to find out about their options for regaining their health and well-being. My guest this week is a nutritional therapist who's taken a focused interest in mycotherapy, or the uses of medicinal mushrooms, for many years, and has spoken about this fascinating topic on the Yes to Life show some years ago. But she's now broadened her attention and aims. I'm speaking to Romina Melwani over the phone to find out more. Hi Romina, welcome back to the Yes to Life show.
Hello, hi Robin, very good to be here with you.
So it was some while back when you last joined us on the show, and there have been some important changes in what you're doing meanwhile that I want to find out more about. You're now working independently, you've got your own website. So what prompted this move and what are your ambitions for this new direction?
I think what prompted the move for me was that, as you well know, Robin, previously we met through my passion for using mushrooms in prevention and in helping to restore health balance, specifically in integrative oncology. And I did spend quite a few years researching the use of these medicinal mushrooms on very specific role that it plays in cancer support. Mm-hmm. And the more I learned about it, the more I read about it, the more I studied about it, the more I realized that mycotherapy, the use of medicinal mushrooms to promote health, was just one aspect that I could dive into in terms of understanding integrative cancer support. So I decided to study a little bit more on other aspects and other specific therapies and specific ways and methods that are out there today in terms of helping with not just cancer support, but generally with health. Yeah. And this is how the journey started. And the more I read up about it, the more I felt, well, if I'm trying to educate myself on these topics, then I feel that everyone in our, not just in our industry, but even informed audiences need to understand and learn a little bit more about all the new therapies out there. And this is how the Nutrition Collective was born, actually.
Mm, excellent. All right. Well, look, I want to talk a lot more about the specifics of what you're now interested in and offering. But maybe you just want to tell us a little bit about, just tell us about the mycotherapy part in terms of training, first of all, maybe, and then what else you've done as well.
So, as you know, I started off with mycotherapy. And in our previous recording, we had mentioned a lot the role that medicinal mushrooms can really play to strengthen the immune system. And when we're looking at cancer support, we're always, always looking to increase our immune defenses. So this is where medicinal mushrooms became very useful in supporting that. And there are various clinical studies and trials now demonstrating that some of these specific molecules in these medicinal mushrooms, mainly the beta-glucans component within it, are able to actually modulate the immune system. So a very, very powerful ingredient in helping to support the immune system. And the more I looked at the immune system, the more I got interested in other therapies. And a couple of years ago, actually, I saw a lecture by Professor Warman, who spoke a lot about mineral balancing and its effect on disease. And what I find quite interesting is that despite, you know, world-leading research being conducted here in the UK, we don't actually talk much about pH balancing and we don't talk much about acid-base balancing and its role in health. And studies have actually now shown that regulating blood pH levels can actually be a very, very powerful tool to bring a client back to homeostasis or restore health, as we say. So this is where I have recently dived into understanding acid-base balance and understanding the role of blood pH in supporting people with cancer and other conditions.
Right. So is this your personal research, or have you done this under the auspices of some kind of training?
It's my personal research, but as I said, Professor Warman has been behind my understanding of it. He's been studying this for about 45 years now.
Right.
And he's conducted quite a few clinical trials himself on understanding how alkalinity can impact health. So there is a lot of information out there, but I think there isn't enough accumulated or regrouped information, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. I definitely want to dive into the subjects you just talked about. So can we just, first of all, just talk about, your general approach? From your website, you're clearly working with all sorts of conditions, although cancer does get a particular mention. And you've just described how you've always had a particular interest in supporting people with cancer. I wondered if this is still the case, even though you're looking at a much broader range of conditions.
So it's an interesting question, Robin, because yes, I do get a lot of people asking, to see me in terms of cancer support. And what I find interesting from that point of view is that as a practitioner, I'm always looking to help, with prevention, as I said, and help with supporting the immune system on the way. But I am seeing a very big number of people coming in for other reasons and then suddenly telling me that they've been diagnosed with some type of cancer. So whilst I don't practice full time, I do see a few clients. And as I was saying before, I'm putting more focus and attention on building the educational events around the Nutrition Collective, as I said.
Okay.
This community that will be the bridge between informed audiences, but mainly between practitioners and ethical companies, and specific experts, subject matter experts, on specific topics.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, just last week, I had an event, an interesting one, around the topic of cancer, which was entitled Hormones and Cancer, the Missing Link. And we did have a very interesting panel of experts talking about this link. So yes, to answer your question, I do see a few clients, but the main body of work that I'm doing here now is really informing everyone of all the new therapies and integrative therapies out there.
Okay, so the weight is definitely towards education then. Okay.
Yeah.
So just to come around to what you've been talking about earlier, so in integrative medicine circles and increasingly in some orthodox circles as well, I'm glad to say, it's established that there are certain key factors in the internal environment of the body that will either promote or actually contain chronic conditions like cancer, and that probably the most acknowledged of those is inflammation. But there are others that are more controversial. You've already mentioned alkalinity. I just want to spend some time establishing what all those factors are, how they act to promote cancer, and what we can do to change them.
Absolutely. I mean, you said the right word here with inflammation, and when we talk about inflammation, we're talking about immune dysregulation. We're talking about so many other factors, as I'm sure a lot of practitioners have mentioned to you, but gut dysbiosis and tumor-promoting inflammation. So the key here with inflammation is really to avoid immune destruction. And it's really, again, to make sure, A, that we are looking at our levels of our immune strength, and we have a host of different cells that will support our immune system. In fact, the word immune, which I found quite interesting, derives from the Latin word immunis, which means exempt of. And what they mean with that is exempt of foreign invaders.
Right.
So basically what we're saying here is that our immune system is our collective army. the one that identifies and destroys millions of microbes, viruses, pathogens harmful to our health. So for me, immunity, our first line of defense, is the key. Mm-hmm. And inflammation, as you well said. When it comes to alkalinity, that's, again, something that's quite close to my heart right now, because, again, I'm feeling that there are a lot of new reviews on pH balancing, and it does play a fundamental role in supporting several chronic diseases. And this is what I have seen in clinical practice. Now, I think I think when people think pH, you know, people remember their chemistry classes back in the day when you're looking at, you know, anything below 7 being acidic and anything above 7 being alkaline and the number 7 being neutral. And that is exactly how our body works. So different parts and different organs in our bodies have different pH levels. And whilst we want to maintain specific acidic pH levels in our gut, our blood, however, needs to remain alkaline. And when the blood isn't at the threshold, the alkaline threshold it's meant to be, this is where we see an acidic environment in the blood that will create a roller coaster of other dysfunctions and will actually allow even cancer cells and other bacteria and other invaders to thrive. So making sure that delicate balance of having an alkaline blood is very, very important, generally speaking, as well.
Mm. So what are the factors affecting whether it's alkaline or not?
A host of different factors. The first factor that would affect alkaline or not would be the foods and the diet that we have. So anything that's very acidic, and I'm talking about acidic-forming foods, such as high-protein, high-dietary meat intake, would create more acidity. And more alkalizing foods, such as a plant-based diet, fruits and vegetables, etc., would create a much more alkaline blood. So what we talk about here is look at the dietary acidic load of a client and take it from there. If the client is eating too many acid-forming foods, i.e. too many proteins that are derived from meat or even plant protein versus the alkalizing foods, then we know that this specific diet is quite acidic. So I think looking at the diet is extremely important. But another factor that actually creates more acidity in the blood, interestingly, is stress. And stress is something I think we all are aware of. We all understand its negative effects on the body. But stress, interestingly, also causes a surge in acidity in our bloodstream.
Mm. Right. That's something I didn't know. I mean, I would associate stress with inflammation. But so, yes, I've not made that connection before. Do we know what the mechanism is for that?
Yes, absolutely. It's a very interesting mechanism. So so as I said, stress is proven to negatively affect the acid-base balance and increases thus the acid levels. But with this increased acid levels, you're creating an increased amount of free ammonia. And this free ammonia actually is what actually causes an increased level in cortisol in the body for normal processes. So what's interesting here is that stress will kickstart, will increase acidity in the lungs and will increase acidity for the kidneys to process extra, to get rid of this extra acid through the free ammonia. So what happens is that then there's a knock-on effect on, interestingly, on the bones. So when the body's trying to buffer the acidity that is caused, it starts to use minerals to stop the blood from being too acidic.
Right. And it takes those minerals from the bones, you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So a lot of these minerals are actually alkalizing. So if we're not consuming alkalizing foods, then the body will have to kickstart this mechanism of bringing in more alkalinity to the blood by leaching out these minerals from the bones, minerals such as magnesium, calcium, potassium, sodium, and some of these minerals are also present in the muscles. So it will leach it out from the bones and the muscle tissues.
How interesting. Okay, so alkalinity as a sort of important topic in cancer, it's been around for a long time in sort of alternative circles, and as certainly as long as I've known anything about it, it's been there as one of the key things that people should do. It's received far less favorable attentions from conventional medicine. I mean, as I say, there's a certain move in conventional medicine towards acknowledging the role of inflammation, and you know, there's talk now of giving anti-inflammatories in order to increase the success of surgery, for example. So there's an acknowledgement that inflammation and cancer is something to pay attention to. But I think it's still the case that alkalinity is out there in terms of being really not on the radar at all of orthodox medicine. Would you agree? And if so, why do you think there's so little interest?
I absolutely agree. It's not on the radar. And interestingly, when you talk about acidosis in general, the medical world understands that term. Yes. But when you're talking about, what I'm talking about here is mild chronic acidosis, which are subclinical levels of this acidity in the bloodstream, which is not being picked up medically, and it's not being recognized, as you said.
I see. But you're saying there is now an increasing amount of research to show what's going on here, so the hope is that it will slowly at least make its way into the mainstream, this idea.
Absolutely. I mean, there's various scientific reports now showing a direct and indirect associations between, let's say, dietary magnesium, for example, a dietary magnesium intake, and breast cancer risk, for example. So, these are not just in vitro studies. We're seeing in vivo studies as well around this idea. And acid-base balance is coming to the forefront of bringing back the body to homeostasis.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a few terms you used there which maybe not all the listeners understand. Do you just want to tell the difference between the different kinds of trials, in vitro, in vivo, and also say a little bit about homeostasis, because that's an interesting term which gets bandied about.
Yes, so when we talk about in vitro studies or clinical trials, we mean any kind of mouse studies or non-human studies, whereas in vivo studies would be more directly related to human studies. That can certainly be a little bit more expensive in terms of trials. And, you know, as you well know, with clinical trials can be quite expensive. And sometimes, supplement companies or charities or associations may not have the funds to run these trials, which then takes quite a long time. Mm. And when I talk about homeostasis, I'm talking about bringing the body back to balance. And it's such an important factor because as practitioners, you know, me included, when we're looking at supporting clients, we are looking at bringing back the body to balance. So for example, Robin, when you mentioned inflammation, mm-hmm. you know, or if you mention, we're talking about regulating the immune system. We're talking about modulating the immune system.
Yes.
And these are words we're using because we naturally, our bodies, our immune systems have the capacity to regulate itself if you feed it the right quality of nutrients.
Right.
So we well know that our levels of immunity or how active our immune system is will depend, as I said, on the quality of the nutrients in our diets, but also the amount of pollutants in our bodies. So, you know, we're in order to bring back that homeostasis or bring back the body to balance, We need to make sure that the immune system is receiving the right quality of nutrients, but also making sure as practitioners that we're supporting, the removal of pollutants from our environment. Mm. And this is what I'm constantly working at when looking at clients, that we want to constantly support them, balance the immune system and bring back the body into balance.
Mm. Interesting. So the word you didn't use there, but which you're referring to, is detoxification, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes, correct. So that's the word that's commonly used. Becoming a more and more important topic. Again, largely ignored by orthodox medicine. I mean, they don't really think there's a problem, whereas it's a bit like the difference between sort of climate change deniers and the rest. You know, some people think there's a major problem and everybody should wake up, and some other people say, what are you going on about? There seems to be a bit of climate change denial going on about the toxins in every aspect of our life, and the fact that these are bound to have an effect on our health eventually, just through the sheer quantity and volume that we're exposed to now on an everyday basis.
Absolutely. I mean, if the body is unable to detoxify itself, then, you know, we are accumulating toxins, which then will lead to our healthy cells being damaged and causing, as you said, inflammation and leading then to chronic disease. So I think it's very important to acknowledge this idea of stopping this accumulation of toxins and also detoxifying naturally, eating foods and having a diet that will help with that detoxification on the one hand, and on the other hand, making sure that we are not exposed to further toxins in our environment.
Mm. So minimizing them. So you made the direct link there between these toxins and the problem we've been discussing of inflammation, that this is the source of many of the inflammatory problems that we have.
Yes, exactly. There is a direct correlation. When we're looking at heavy toxicity in the body, then we're looking at firstly the immune system trying to fight off these toxins, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, we're looking at we're looking at a lot of our organs working really, really hard to remove these toxins, such as the liver and the kidney. And in this environment of high toxicity, invasion from, as we say, the unwanted foreigners, such as microbes, viruses, etc. Becomes very, very easy for these kind of bacterial imbalances to occur.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've already said that you kind of broadened out your interest to include a lot of other aspects of integrative medicine, and you're wanting people to learn more about these approaches. Nonetheless, you've got this particular expertise from where you started off from with mycotherapy. Now, I mean, I'm a massive fan of mushrooms and their ability to help human beings in an extraordinary number of ways. Would you just tell us a little bit now about the particular relationship between humans and the mushroom family and why this is of particular interest to people with cancer?
So what I found really interesting with mushrooms is that we do share a lot of DNA and genetic material, interestingly, with mushrooms. And we're closer, actually, in terms of genetic similarity to mushrooms than to plants.
How about that?
And this is one of the reasons that we're able to harness the positive and the beneficial properties that mushrooms have, or have accumulated over the centuries. And mushrooms also are one of the first living organisms, on this planet. And they have, over time, built a chemical cloak of protection around them because they have faced various challenges, you know, over millennials. And I mean, I'm talking about, bacterial invasions, I'm talking about earthquakes, I'm talking about different climatic conditions, And these mushrooms, interestingly, have survived all of these challenges over time, and they have built this amazing protective cloak around them,
right,
and specific protective ingredients that they've been able to develop over time to support and to survive, basically. And what I think is fascinating here is that as humans, because we share so much of our genetic material to these mushrooms, we're able to use these very same, our bodies are able to absorb the very same mechanisms by ingesting more of these mushrooms.
Mm.
And there's a very big difference between our, typical button mushrooms or, the famous portobello mushrooms that we find here in the UK. Versus the medicinal types, which have medicinal properties. And whilst there's thousands and thousands of different mushroom species found in the world, maybe just about 200 to 300 would have these medicinal properties, which are the ones I'm specifically interested in.
Right.
This doesn't mean that the normal mushrooms are not helpful or supportive. They definitely are. But I have, really zoomed into those that have these specific immune modulating properties.
Yeah, and it's really that feature that's particularly of interest to people with cancer, isn't it?
Exactly. As I was saying before, when we're looking at the immune system, we're looking to modulate the immune system. And when we talk about inflammation, we know that it's not just about strengthening the immune system or stimulating the immune system, it's about modulating it, because too much of inflammation as well can have a negative impact on health.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at something that is modulating, that is supportive, that is balancing the immune system, then you're thinking about these mushrooms and you're thinking about their role in supporting the immune system, to strengthen it and to make sure that our immune army, as I call it, is able to defend itself from invaders.
Mm. And the way it's able to do this, talking about mushrooms as a whole, is pretty unique, really, isn't it? I mean, there's nothing else quite like it.
There really isn't nothing else quite like it. I mean, a lot of people will come to me and say, well, I've heard that... So the specific immune modulating property comes from this very unique ingredient called beta-glucans.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people will come to me and say, well, I've heard that beta-glucans are present in oats and in other mushrooms. So that's what I'll do. I'll take beta-glucans from other sources. And I always tell them that the specific type of beta-glucans that are present in these specific mushrooms have the highest immune modulating capacity. Yes, the others also have that capacity, but they do not have it in the level we refer to, because the immune system, as you know, is a very complex system. We have hundreds of different cells, and these mushrooms and their immune modulating properties are effective on all of these different cells, not just one of these cells. So it's very important to see where what kind of beta glucans we are talking about. Of course, it's experts would be able to identify that in some of the different mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the mechanism and its effects and everything, the evidence behind this now, it's pretty solid, isn't it?
It's very, very solid. I mean, the whole health community is seeing that there is effectively, that these beta-glucans are effectively supporting the immune system. In fact, in Japan, they have created, back in the 80s, they have created, a drug that contains one of these mushrooms combined with one of their chemotherapy treatments. And from what I hear in Japan, it is one of the most important remedies or medications available for people who have been diagnosed with cancer. So I find that very interesting that the world has recognized this, because we do have these clinical trials, as I said before, and we do have very specific studies that are demonstrating that these specific molecules that are present in these mushrooms have the ability to support the immune system, modulate the immune system, and allow the immune system to fight off the tumors. I think it's especially in the integrative community now, integrative doctors, integrative oncologists are becoming more and more aware of the potential of using medicinal mushrooms integratively.
Mm. Well, they certainly are a great resource in that way. You get the best of both worlds when you combine two things in the way that you're describing the Japanese do there. I mean, yes, people often need something that actually reduces the burden of cancer substantially, mm-hmm. and chemotherapy does that, but we all know that it has this terrible effect on the immune system. And to actually combine it with something that actually ameliorates that is just, well, common sense, I would call it. And the fact that we don't do it here, in fact, there's no consideration of something like a mushroom product being used in oncology generally is a bit of a crime, I think, because as you said, the science is there to show that it does actually work.
Absolutely. And not only it is supporting the immune system, but actually these mushrooms, if used integratively with conventional therapies, are actually decreasing the side effects of these specific treatments.
Yes.
So that I find interesting as well, because it will only enhance the effect of whatever else that the person decides to take, mm. and will support them in terms of the side effects we typically see in these kind of treatments, such as any kind of digestive health issues, nausea, lack of appetite. All of these side effects are actually reduced when taking the mushrooms in combination with these.
All plus. Yeah, brilliant. I just want to quickly talk about one thing that, alongside the growth of integrative medicine and a lot of the research and work that's gone on in health promotion, if you like, that side of things, mm-hmm. has been the rise of testing. And this has been largely driven by the functional medicine community, I think. And on the face of it, mm-hmm. these tests are brilliant things. They give detailed information about the imbalances, the weaknesses. Things that may be at the root of many common problems. However, they've got one important shortcoming, is that the sheer quantity of them, they all seem brilliant, but there are an awful lot of them, and they all cost money. So on the face of it, they seem like a great idea, but it's very difficult for the public, for people with cancer, to navigate, well, how much of their resource should go into testing. And I'm just wondering if this is something that you've looked into or not, and whether it's something you're interested in providing education about as well.
Certainly, my next event, I would like to look at this more in detail, because mm. you are absolutely right. There are so many different testing companies, and some of them I personally feel are quite effective because they're looking at specific cancer markers. Other testing companies have mentioned to me that they are also able to test for the effectiveness of all the therapies that the person might be considering,
right.
whether it's such as chemotherapy or even natural ingredient. Because
yes.
what I find interesting in testing is that as practitioners, we always say that every person is unique. Mm-hmm. And every person has a very unique genetic background, is exposed to specific environmental backgrounds. And if we're able to just look at which um, you know, what type of ingredients affect what person. I think it gives you a better idea on, you know, what to do next. I was listening to a talk the other day, and actually, you know, even if you're using natural remedies, you know, today we talk about vitamin C, for example, and mm-hmm. high levels of vitamin C being very effective in supporting people who have been diagnosed with cancer. But again, if you look back at the genetic component of that person, the therapy may or may not have an effect on them. And again, it depends on their genetic predisposition for all of these different elements. So I personally am a firm believer of testing, but I'm still exploring that side of things and speaking to different testing companies. And actually, Robin, as you said, I would like to bring that more, you know, I would like to be able to explain that more in detail by having an event where we can explain these different testing companies, their markers, and what is the benefit of using them, basically.
Right. Well, I think that would be very helpful. It's getting more and more confusing, I think. But, you know, if they cost £10 each, these tests, you do a lot of them. But they don't. So, in fact, the ones for testing for what's going to work and what isn't going to work really are a lot of money that people may be thinking, well, shouldn't I be spending that on the treatment? And it's a tough decision because if they were cheap, you wouldn't dream of not doing them, of course, because they will only add to the success of what you're doing. But it's certainly difficult. So that would make a great topic. I was going to ask you recently, you mentioned you put on this interesting event. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend. I was a bit gutted about that. But I hear it went very well. And I just like to know what else you might have in the pipeline.
So some of the different topics I have in the pipeline is definitely, as I said, you know, cancer support is very much something I'm interested in. So in one of the events, I would like to talk about very specific types of cancers and what we can do integratively to support them. I'm extremely interested in the brain, actually, in brain tumors and understanding that side of things. So at the moment, I'd like to bring in a panel of experts to talk about that side of things. And another event I'd like to zoom into are looking at all the different toxins we are exposed to today. I mean, when you look at the role of aluminium, of gluten, of certain toxins that can actually increase, as I said, that toxic buildup in our body, then you want to inform people more about the damages some of these toxins can do. So that is another event in the pipeline. But I definitely think, as you said, in terms of testing, that could be a very interesting topic and event to inform people about the different benefits and uses of tests that people can use. And yes, you're absolutely right, they can be quite expensive, but once you know what's best for you, then you know you would give your 100% to continuing down that route. So I definitely think that it's important for people to understand the use of it and the benefits of using these tests.
Okay, well, look, we're going to have to end there, but maybe you just want to tell listeners, if they want to find out more about you and your work as a practitioner, and also if they want to find out more about the events you're going to put on, what's the best way?
Yes, so for me as a practitioner, my website is Belief, like Belief Nutrition. Again, Robin, just like you, I'm quite into the whole green environment being sustainable. So I played on the word of LEAF, so beliefnutrition.com.
L-E-A-F, B-E-L-E-A-F.
Exactly, B-E-L-E-A-F, nutrition.com.
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit about the work I do as a practitioner. And in terms of the events, the website is called nutritioncollective.co.uk. And as I said, it's a community for integrative practitioners, informed audiences, and ethical companies to come together. And the idea is to become the bridge within the industry so that people can remain informed and attend educational events that would help them in their personal journeys and in their professional careers as well.
Brilliant. All right. I'll end it there. Thank you very much indeed, Romina. It's been very interesting to talk to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Robin. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Do make a point of joining Romina's Nutritional Collective mailing list to keep up to date with her events as they develop. A reminder to make sure your seat at the Yes to Life conference on nutritional science and cancer early next year is secure before you go off on your Christmas break. And also, the Yes to Life is just about to launch The Big Week Off, a January detox fundraiser for the charity, which will give you an opportunity to try a spell of fasting from 1 to 7 days as you feel is right for you, giving your body systems a well-earned post-Xmas break, improving your well-being and raising much-needed funds for Yes to Life at the same time. What a brilliant combination. So watch out for the launch on the Yes to Life website and on social media under hashtag The Big Week Off. Thanks for listening today. I look forward to speaking to you again next week in another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Bye. Thank you.